This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
How I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. And if I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take.
Real life is scarier than anything we can dream of, and we dream such frightening things. Sci-fi and Scream, Be Afraid, Be Very Afraid, on Joy
94.9.
Hi, you've reached Nikki. If you're gonna leave a message, you better have something good to say.
Hey, it's me. I'm about to go into Alice's. If you want to stop by after work, please do. It'd be great to see you. If not, I will see you tomorrow. Okay. Bye.
Look at you.
Where's Nick? She's at work. But she might stop by later, though.
Okay. Single girl tonight, then. Well, come on, let's get us a drink. What are you having?
I think you've already had enough.
Oh, hush, hush. Come on, what are you having?
Just get me a beer.
Thanks so much for wanting to talk to us here on Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Eric England, the director and the creator of something called Contracted, for its big major release here on DVD in Australia through Monster Pictures Australia. We're really excited about it. We've seen it. Some of us who are very privileged. And I want to welcome you to the show, Eric.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you for the kind words about my little movie.
It's not just a little movie, is it, really? Look, let's just talk about Contracted as far as a synopsis. Basically, it's been described as a horror thriller film. Mm-hmm. You've directed it and written it, of course. Now, it's already been out in the States end of November, and it was at the Monster Fest as a highlight piece of cinema film during the Monster Fest in November here in Melbourne, Australia. But it's pretty much, I'm finding it really interesting performance-wise with Jara Townsend. She does a wonderful job. But it is about a pretty disgusting concept. Catching, let's face it, catching something, well, the nastiest STD I've ever heard of in film. So tell us, why did you come up with this idea to make a film?
That's a great question. Why?
Why would you do that?
Yeah, I know. I guess I didn't get laid enough in high school. If I'm not having sex, no one is. So I think the idea really kind of manifested itself when I wanted to do a certain type of movie. And without giving too much away, you know, I knew I wanted to make a film in a certain subgenre that began as infection, disease. Some people identify it as a body horror film, but I never really set out to make a body horror film. I wanted to make what the movie ultimately ends up being, and I started kind of reverse engineering my way backwards and saying, you know, how would I make this movie starting from here and using sex as kind of the introduction to this horrific scenario. And I knew I wanted to do something that was very intimate, and I figured there's nothing more intimate than sex, especially from the female perspective at that age and being confused and going through all the troubles that she's going to. So it was just a very natural kind of chemistry that where all these elements sort of fit together in a very natural way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious too, I guess, for some of our listeners and myself, why you decided on it being a lesbian character for the protagonist, the poor woman who contracts God knows what this is, this disease, Samantha.
I chose to go with her being a lesbian really for two reasons. One, I thought it would make the plot and the kind of narrative conflict of the movie a lot more interesting just from a very basic standpoint. You know, the fact that she's in a relationship with a woman and she contracts this disease from a man, and the actual incident itself is very questionable in terms of, you know, is she sleeping with him out of anger and depression and throwing herself at this man because her relationship relationships bad, or was she date raped and was she drugged? You know, it's a very, there's a blurry line, and that was the whole point of this movie, was to show that there's a gray area. Not everything's as black and white as we always want it to be. These are flawed characters in a very flawed world, you know. The other reason was simply the fact that we don't see those types of characters represented in cinema, especially genre cinema, very often. You know, usually if you see a gay character or a person that's sexually ambiguous, they're usually kind of the butt of the joke, or, you know, they're kind of a cliche, or they're there to kind of be a plot point with their sexuality. And for this, I didn't want her to be kind of a cliche or anything like that. Like, I wanted her to just be a normal person and the main protagonist of our film, and you just accept her sexuality for what she is, because that, I think that's how the world is today, and or at least how it should be, you know. So I figure movies need to start moving that way as well.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting. I did wonder if you had any friends who'd had an experience like this. Did this come from any stories that you knew of yourself, or any?
No personal experience, no friend.
Doctor that you have at that clinic. Now, that was really disturbing. And I guess that's the whole point of the film for me when I was watching it, which I've watched about 3 times now. I've been pretty lucky to do
God
that.
Oh, God, love you. Thank you.
And that is basically, it feels like this character, Sam or Samantha, yeah, she's a bit confused perhaps still. Well, she seems to be making up her mind about her girlfriend, but her girlfriend has made up her mind about her, just not obviously the way that poor Samantha wants it. And it seems like every single person that is her so-called friend, and even her mother, they all have preconceptions about Samantha, and mm-hmm. they all pretty much don't trust her living her life, being herself. And they keep on saying to her, oh, is it drugs, or why are you doing this to yourself, Sam? Why are you doing this to yourself, when she hasn't done it to herself? Apocalyptic, nasty disease, which God knows could be the next zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
But everyone's treating her like she's a child. She can't look after herself.
That was kind of the idea, was, you know, isolating her as much as possible and, you know, making her feel, I think that adds to the vulnerability of the character. You know, whether you identify with her or not, or even like her, you have to respect that, you know, she's going through a lot of problems, and the people around her in her life are not helping it, because they're so close-minded with their own agendas of what they want from her. You know, her mom wants her to be closer to her and stay at home, and she thinks she's on drugs, and her best friend secretly wants to be with her, and there's this guy who's kind of stalking her, and he wants to be her friend, but he's stuck in the friend zone, and her girlfriend doesn't want to be around her, but she's stringing her along. And it's just, everyone's kind of a shit character in this movie, and I think that adds to the downward spiral of where do you turn when there's no one to turn to, and you have to fight this on your own, and you're in denial yourself.
It's pretty tragic, actually. It's a very tragic kind of little film. You've called it a little film, but it does take on some really big questions that we do all have when we're that age. Maybe we're sexually experiencing things that are, you know, more diverse, or whatever you like to call it, sexually and preference wise and that type of thing. And then this disease happens, and nobody really supports you, including the doctor. I mean, what was really exasperating to watch was the doctor himself actually saying, look, she had to wait for the test results, when it's obvious that she's very ill.
Yeah, exactly.
And I thought, are you trying to make a satire?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a very blatant satire, but I mean, the movie's about a girl who contracts an STD and, you know, starts to rot her away, essentially, you know. Ooh. So there's a layer of humor, I think, you know, and obviously I didn't want to take it too seriously. There are little bits of humor in there, but I mean, I definitely think the overall thing, we were dramatizing it to a very extreme level, and it's one of those things where it's like, I didn't necessarily want to make a horror comedy, but I'm absolutely not offended or upset if people laugh during the movie, because I laugh during the movie, you know. There's absolutely some very dark humor in there, and I think in a movie like this, you have to. You can look at it one of two ways. You can look at it as a very emotional piece that's very tragic, or you can sit back and have fun and experience the ride as this character descends into hell, essentially, and everyone kind of goes with her, and she's dragging everyone down. And, you know, for me, that's kind of a multi-experience film, you know, depending on the state of mind you're in and your perspective. So I think it's a very diverse movie in that way, and I'm okay with the subtlety, you know?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. The doctor goes, why don't you just put a bit of moisturizer on it?
Exactly.
On the rash, for example, and wait for the results. And it's obviously pretty severe. There's things going on down below that are stomach turning, but you can't help but laugh.
Yeah.
Which is kind of wrong. We shouldn't be laughing. Yeah. It can happen.
No,
to everyone,
you absolutely you know? Should. I think it's great because, you know, really, ultimately what she's turning into, there's no, how would you diagnose that? You know, no doctor's ever seen that. No one would really know how to handle it. You know, there are diseases that we as a society and as a people can't conquer today. So here's this new disease that's introduced. And it's like, the reality is this is the first case we've ever seen of this, you know, at least in the world that this movie takes place in. I just found it humorous that it's like, no one would have all the answers. And there's a lot of people who are like, oh, well, she should go to the hospital and she should be admitted into like her own ward and her own unit. And I'm like, yeah, but that's not an interesting film with her laying in a hospital bed the entire movie. And beyond that, it's people wouldn't know what to do in this scenario. You know, it's like, it's so outrageous. It's like, you don't know what you would do until you're there. So you have to there has to be a little bit of fun implemented.
I think it's the total antithesis, the opposite of something like Rec, because the Rec franchise, the government seems organized, the medical experts seem organized, everybody's organized and wants to quarantine these people, whether they have some infection or not. But in your film, nobody really seems to give a damn or know what to do.
Yeah, exactly.
The total flip side. And to me, that seems more genuine, more scarily real.
Yeah.
And again, you know, the reality hits home that this could happen to anyone. Sadly.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, to get to the cast, you've got a brilliant cast, actually. How did you come across Jara Townsend? She does
Najara.
A great job. Najara. Does a great job.
Yeah.
She's certainly a busy woman. I looked her up on the IMDb, and she seems really busy. How did you come across her?
We came across her through Matt Mercer, who plays Riley in the film, who was also one of my co-producers. We were searching high and low for an actress, and actually the way the movie came about was extremely quickly. I was looking to do something and I was ready to move fast. I was just kind of getting anxious and ready to make my next movie. And we finally got the financing for the movie, and we got the financing before I ever wrote the script. So I started writing the script in March of 2012, and we started shooting the movie by May of 2012. So there was literally less than 2 months in between me writing the film and us shooting. So we needed to find an actress really fast, and originally I had a few actors in mind, and I really wanted to try and get someone of a certain status and all that stuff. But when you're shooting that quickly and you're moving that fast, you have to rearrange your schedule for these people and come up with money and all this crap.
Yeah.
So I decided I didn't want to deal with that game, and I wanted to just find the best actress for the role. And Matt Mercer told me about this young actress that he had worked with, and he was like, you know, I think she's great. She might be a little younger than what you originally wanted, but I think she can kill it. So he brought her in, and she auditioned, and literally before she ever even started to audition, I knew she was perfect. And it was kind of hers to lose from that point on. And we brought her in 2 more times for callbacks, and then we met with her, and I made her meet all my people and, you know, my producers, because, you know, when you're doing a movie like this, you really have to trust the actor who's playing Samantha. You know, the whole movie rests on her shoulders. So not only did I have to have a really strong actress, but I had to have someone who, for the most part, was going to be like my new best friend and someone that I could trust
with my movie,
you know? So Najara and I just clicked really well, and there was this instant connection, and we loved working with each other. And we kind of had this shorthand of the way we talk and communicate, and we're very much cut from the same cloth. So I just knew it was her, and we hired her, you know, right away and locked her in, and she just, you know, knocked it out of the park. I completely forgot about this until recently when she was telling me, but I remember like sitting her down right after we had offered her the role and she had accepted. And I asked her, I was like, so I have a question for you. Are you going to kick ass doing this movie or what? And she was like, yeah, I think so. So, you know, I had no filter with her. Like, I just let her know, like, hey, I have to trust you and you have to trust me. And I think it worked out.
Because it's that type of storyline. Certainly she would have to be open to what was going to go on and, you know, the performance and some of the special effects, which were amazingly gruesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Congratulations, they were very good.
Thank you so much.
Now, I believe, I don't know if this is true or not, I can always edit, but are you colorblind, is that correct?
I am colorblind, yes ma'am.
But again, the colors of the blood and everything else was just brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and of course, yeah, very realistic, taking it to the next level. But you've also got well-known screen queen, an older actress as such,
yes.
Caroline Williams. Now, most people would know her from the original sequel to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre back in 86. And, of course, she's been in Leprechaun 3, Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, the reboot of the Halloween story lines, and more recently Hatchet 3. Now, how did she come about for such, you know, a woman of that stature? I mean, it was exciting to see her.
It was kind of out of nowhere. We were about 2 or 3 weeks away from shooting, and we were freaking out because we didn't have a mom character or a mom actress to play that role. And that was actually, I believe, on the first week of shooting. So we were really nervous about finding that role. And we had gone out to a few actresses that were kind of in the same world as Caroline. Like, I didn't necessarily want to get a Scream Queen, even though I ended up with one.
Yeah.
I really just wanted someone that I was a fan of, you know, someone that I had seen when I was younger who we, you know, maybe haven't seen in a while, or we haven't seen do this kind of role. And we went out to a few really interesting choices, and we got very close with a few of them. And at the end of the day, they ended up turning us down because of the subject matter and because of the content, which is ironic because the mom doesn't really have any of the more gruesome part, you know. So it was kind of disheartening while we were looking. And you know, in Los Angeles, you know, in that age range, you have very limited selection, super talented actresses, because they're all either really, really busy all the time, or they're either retired, or they're moms now and they have kids, which is the case with Caroline. Caroline has a kid, and she's in, you know, she has to take him to school and, you know, all that stuff. Once we were rejected by a few of our top choices, we started kind of, Matt and I, who did the casting on the film, we started kind of talking about who could we get, and we were watching Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, actually. Matt and I do this thing, Matt and I kind of did a little bit of everything on this movie, if you haven't noticed, but we were at my place, and we do this thing that we call Drunken Horror Movie Night, where we watch horror movies and get really wasted. And the movie of the night was Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, and I think Matt hadn't seen it or something like that. And anyways, Caroline popped up on screen, and I said, what if we got Caroline Williams? Like, I haven't seen her anything besides this recently, and it's more of a cameo than anything. And he was like, wow, that's great. I wonder, you know, how we could do that. And we started kind of brainstorming. Do we know anyone that knows her or anything like that? And I think Matt just, like, sent her a message on Facebook, and she responded to him the next day. And before I knew it, like 2 days later, we were having lunch with Caroline, and she was just this big ball of energy. And ironically, she was from the same state here in America that I am. So we had that in common, and it was just kind of one of those signs. And before I knew it, we were locking her in, and she was so excited, and she just really understood the movie. So it was just one of those serendipitous moments again, where we took a chance and it came through.
She's brilliant in it, I think. You just want to slap her.
Yeah.
I just want to slap her and say, can't you see your daughter's in real desperate trouble here?
It's amazing.
And who's the character she brings in? Is he he's like some sort of religious guy, or is he a doctor or something? I can't remember the actor's
Dave Holmes.
Dave Holmes, that's it.
Yeah, as Dave Holmes
therapist,
plays.
But,
he
creepy.
Plays her therapist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very creepy. Small part, but very creepy.
Once again, a friend of Matt Mercer's. We really cast this entire movie with nothing but friends and favors and, you know, people we knew. Actually, Caroline and Najara were the only two actors that I had never met before we started filming. Everyone else was either a friend or, you know, an acquaintance or something like that. I'd either worked with them before or I had wanted to work with them, so.
And, of course, Alice McDonald is wonderful as Alice. I mean,
yeah, she's great. I wrote classic. That role for Alice.
All right, cool. Excellent. All right, now, look, yeah, like I said, it did well at the Monster Film Festival here in Melbourne in November of 2013 this year. Exceptionally well there, and certainly there was a real buzz attached to it. And I think a lot of people were holding their stomachs after watching it. And of course, it's going to be released here too, DVD, so we're pretty excited about that, and more people hopefully will see it. Now, has it done its run through festivals here and overseas, or what happens to the film next?
I believe it's done here in America with festivals, but I'm still hoping to take it overseas as much as possible, especially in countries that don't necessarily have all the distribution yet, or, you know, countries that hasn't played in theaters yet. Because when making this film, I saw it as this intimate, you know, dark, weird story. But now that I've traveled the world with the movie and seen it in different countries and in theaters with foreign audiences, it's incredible how well the movie plays with an audience. It's so much fun to witness the people cringing and screaming and cheering out, and really kind of an audience fueled film, which I didn't really expect when I was making it. So that's great. But yeah, it's still in theaters here in America, and we're reaching probably the end of our run. It'll be on DVD and Blu-ray here shortly. But yeah, I'm hoping to continue taking it around the world in festivals as much as possible in between making my next movie and, you know, doing all the other stuff that I have to do to continue my career.
Yeah, of course. Now, I did think, I was sort of had my imagination going, I was thinking maybe you could rename the film if you were going to. You could call it I'm Okay, How Are You?
That's a great title.
I'm Okay, I'm Fine. And she does remind me of a young version of Jennifer Aniston. Did you ever think Jennifer Aniston, maybe she could be playing a character like this? Have you got a thing about Jennifer Aniston?
I would love to work with Jennifer Aniston. It's funny, Najjar gets she gets compared to like Rooney Mara and actresses like that a lot. So yeah. I never thought
demeanor or something about her. It looks like she can do comedy as well, Najjar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's. You know what's funny is Najjar is actually not that funny. So she would love to hear you say that.
Well, in this film, she is hilarious, but probably not intentionally.
Yeah, she's very pitiful and tragic.
It is tragic. Now, without spoiling it too much, is this your zombie story, do you think?
I mean, without spoiling it, yeah. I would say so. Yeah, I think if someone ever came to me and said, hey, we'd like for you to do a zombie movie, because I'm not interested in doing the conventional films that we've seen before, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Some people don't really consider this a zombie movie. Some people have called her a vampire. Some people have called her just a plain monster. Some people have just called her infected. You know, it's so that's why I never say what it is. But, you know, essentially for me, this is the genesis of the movies we've seen before. And this is a way to tell a story in a world that we've seen told a million times just when you think we can't do something fresh with it.
Yeah, it's pretty fresh, literally.
Oh, thank you.
I can even imagine the smell of her body, but not in a nice way, obviously. I'm hilarious with Matt's performance as Riley. How he could have gone there.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Desperate. Yeah, he is amazing. Good on him. Now, I hope no animals were hurt during this film.
No, none at all.
Okay, cool. That's good. And what next for your career? Speaking about other things apart from Contracted, can you talk about any projects you have on the horizon?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm working on a film right now that I believe we're going to start shooting this coming year in 2014 called Hellbent. It's a great classic horror story. It centers around possession and demons, and it's set in kind of a blue-collar, working-class world. And I'm really excited to do that one because it's got elements of The Exorcist and The Thing, and there's a lot of mystery and paranoia surrounding it. And if it happens before everything else, it'll be the first script that I've directed that I didn't write. And when I read the script, I got chills, and I still get chills when I read it. It's just an incredibly powerful script by a great new writer named TJ Simfell. It's a script that I've had kind of with me for a couple years now. We just now found the money and everything to do it, thanks to the recent success of, you know, Contracted and everything that's kind of swirling around that. So a lot of doors have opened up, and I'm working on another film that I haven't really announced yet. I'm actually still writing it right now, and it looks like it might actually be happening pretty soon. So as soon as that starts to materialize and get ready, I'm going to announce a little more. But it's going to continue spinning some new ground in the horror genre that we either haven't seen before, or if we have, we definitely haven't seen it like this or in a while.
Yeah. Oh, no, that sounds really good. The whole genre needs a new spin. And I think your film Contracted, American Mary from the Soska twins.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of European films, or French films in particular, the French extreme films, they've got that sensibility of the horror that's the most scariest is the stuff that happens to yourself, you know.
Exactly.
And you can empathize with a person who you believe, wow, that could happen to me or someone close to me. And that's terrifying without anyone lurking behind a door with a big chainsaw or anything. It's more grounded, I think, or body horror, as the term seems to be at the moment.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that.
Oh, that's cool. All right, look, Eric, look, we've talked quite a bit, and I know we've had a few, but I really appreciate the chance you've had today to talk to us here in Australia on Sci-Fi and Scream.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
That's cool.
I'm Eric England, the writer and director of Contracted, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
beautiful.
I'm already young. I'm 25, so I don't need anything else against me in my career.
Oh, fair enough. All right, great. Look, thank you so much again. Good luck with the rest of Contracted. Take it to the UK. I reckon they'll love it over there.
Absolutely. We played Fright Fest earlier, and they ate it up. So
Did they love it?
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, they'd appreciate that, I reckon. And definitely good luck with Hellbent.
Sci-Fi and Scream says what year it's been.
Hi, Pollyanna McIntosh. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.